podcast uses profanity and topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listen at your own risk. Welcome back to Hell on Heels podcast. I'm Bryce.
I'm Amanda.
And hello.
Hi. What's up?
Welcome. Not much. Just growing bebes.
Oh, are you still doing that?
Yeah, it's a new pastime I have. I don't think I'm going to continue after this project, but you know.
I hear that often about that one specific hobby. I feel like you either keep going or you're like, no, I'm good.
I think I'm after I finish this project, because I can't leave this project unfinished.
Obviously. Yeah, you can't just take it out of the oven.
Yeah, and I'm an overachiever, so there's two of them. So can't, you know, can't take both buns out. Yeah. So I think once we finish that, we're probably done and not doing it again.
Okay.
Fun story with that. I've told my team at work because, you know, whatever, no big deal. But I haven't like told, I haven't announced it to the whole office. I just told like my immediate team.
Yeah.
But I told them in December. I told them like right before, like our final meeting before Christmas break. Mm-hmm. I should say before everyone took their time off for Christmas.
They've known for a while.
Yeah, so they've known. Yeah, apparently rumor mill is just barely spreading, because I got a message yesterday from one of the ladies in a department that we work pretty close with, and she's like, I heard you were pregnant with twins. And I said, that is a true rumor, yeah. And she was like, oh, what? Well, yeah, I'm getting pretty far along.
I've kind of got two whole babies in there.
Yeah, they are viable outside of the womb, guys. Like, that's another one. And then today at work, in case you guys are wondering, we're recording on a Friday, so I actually had to work today. But today at work, I was on a call. It was a customer call, but the customer is always late. So I was talking to the other guys on the call, and one of our sales guys was like, Bryce, I heard that you're pregnant with twins.
Y'all was like, really late to the party.
I was like, oh yeah, yeah, I sure am. Rumor mill is true. And he's like, look, the rumor mill doesn't get to me because he is East Coast.
Oh, so it's on time for him.
Hey, you know what? For everyone else is late. He is on time.
He's behind you, right? Hours wise or time wise?
He's ahead.
Oh, never mind. Yeah. Okay. He should have known before you did then.
Yeah. But I was telling it. I was like, if it makes you feel better, other people in Utah are just finding out. So you're not that far behind. You're a day behind the rumor mill. And so, yeah. So that was that.
Poor guy.
I was like, sorry, Derek. I wasn't trying to exclude you. I just haven't been, like, I haven't needed to tell anyone, you know?
I kind of feel you on that, because I was kind of like that. I know when I finally invited people on Facebook to my baby shower, there were people I literally messaged, and I was like, hey, so I'm 7.5 months pregnant, and I'm having a shower. Do you want to come?
Oh, yeah.
So
I have not really been... Okay, maybe I'm just mean. Or maybe it's just me. I don't want to invite people to the baby shower that I haven't talked to in like over a year. Cause I feel like that's just me being like, give me baby stuff. Like if I don't talk to you this year, I'm sorry, we're not that close. And I don't want to be mean.
No, I think that makes sense.
So.
And you can always say, like, if they get upset, you can always say like, I just wanted to keep it intimate. That's a weird word.
There's two of them.
Two baby showers?
Yeah.
But they're for different families, right? Like different sides of the family. Yeah. I feel like that's normal.
I think if I could go back and like put my foot down, I probably would have done one. It would have been so much easier. Just everyone comes to one.
It's too late now.
Yeah, it's too late. There's invitations for both of them. And I'm like, it's fine. 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 But lesson learned. So for anyone having baby shower, baby soon, baby showers, and you have family that wants to split it, I just recommend doing one. Don't do two.
Because then you have to go to two.
Yeah.
That's the hard part.
I have to brush my hair for two baby showers.
Ugh.
That I have to be the center of... I'm the center of attention. Even though I don't want to be. But it's okay. It's okay.
Boy, better you than me, let me tell you.
Yeah, we're just hanging in there. But so yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm like, oh, just, I feel bad. Like, I don't want people to pay for the baby. Like, I've been telling people, like, tell me what you need me to do. Tell me what you need me to get. And everyone's like, we got it. No, like, this isn't your guys' child. Like, if I'm doing a baby shower, I guess I should pay for it. No. So.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, that's nice, though.
I mean, my mom, I kind of am like, well, just tell me what I owe you. And she'll either cave or she'll just keep ignoring me.
I feel like with this one, she might just keep ignoring you.
And people are asking my mom, why are you doing it so early? Because we're doing them in April. My mom's like, there's two of them in there. She's not going to last 40 weeks.
Okay.
So,
first of all, I hope you don't have to last that long. But also, plus, like, she's doing it early, so you're not going to be miserable during it.
I mean, I will be, because there's two of them. They've started kicking around a lot more, and so mm-hmm. one of them, I'm pretty sure, keeps aiming for my rib cage.
Love it.
Or stomach. I'm not sure, because every time he kicks, it sends a spurt of heartburn up my throat.
Perfect. Okay.
The other one, because I'm pretty sure, I can't remember for sure if this is correct, I'm pretty sure the bladder stays lower.
I think it does. Yeah, because they sit on it most of the time.
Yeah. The other one keeps compressing my bladder so hard that it's painful.
Uh-huh.
And so they're each just taking turns.
What if you got Kung Fu Hustle in your belly or something, these boys?
I don't know. They're just mean.
Oh, wow. They are your kids.
I know, right? I say that just because I'm like, that kind of feels uncomfortable. And then they go more aggressive. I'm like, okay. I guess maybe that's
uncomfortable.
I know, right? But we're getting big and fat, and that's, you know, that's that. I do have a story to tell you. Oh, I already messed up this episode.
Uh-oh.
Because I was told that you and I are shellfish.
We're shellfish?
That's what I was told specifically, but they mean selfish.
Oh, because I was about to say, I'm no mollusk.
We are shellfish mollusks. So I get a call from my father and my little sister from Milster.
I'm already excited.
First thing they tell me is we're selfish. Because all we do on the podcast is talk about us. Which I would like to say that is not true. How many stories of Mill and my dad have I given?
At this point, one an episode, I
think. Yeah. And mm-hmm. so, I mean, I didn't think that was so selfish. But I was told that we need to do one episode where we don't talk about us at all and we talk about Mill and my dad.
Absolutely not. Putting my foot down.
The whole episode we won't talk about Mill. But I do have a story. She knows I'm sharing it. She's not happy I'm sharing it.
That is a dirty smile.
She is the one that wanted me to talk about her.
Okay.
Okay. So, you know, she's in football, like tackle football, full-on pads, everything. And there was a practice where, I guess Mill's belly was hurting her. But Mill plays center, so she's the one that snaps the ball. For those of you that are like me that don't know anything about football, she snaps the ball to the quarterback. That's apparently, you know, mm-hmm. a position. That's a whole position called center. Anyways.
And it's in the center. It's in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I figured center, like you're somewhere in the center.
Yeah.
I didn't know she was the one snapping the ball to the quarterback. Anyways,
okay.
They were doing some practice, running through plays, doing whatever they do. And Mill was bent over and the quarterback was, you know, had her hands right by her butt.
Uh-oh.
And my dad blew his whistle to, you know, I don't know what happened, but something happened, blew the whistle. And Mill, later when they get in the car, tells my dad, yeah, it's a good thing when you blew your whistle, I let out a fart silently. She was gonna fart on her little quarterback out there.
That is girl on girl crying.
She heard the whistle and she used the whistle as a cover. Cause then the quarterbacks, you know, stepped away at that point.
Yeah.
So okay, you know.
First of all, it's badass that she plays full tackle football. That's cool. Don't fart in people's faces. Come on now.
I think she was trying to hold it, but it was like, yeah, getting when it was like, oh, I don't know if I can. And that whistle came at the right time.
Thank God. I know. Look, I don't wish tummy troubles on anybody.
I don't know if she was having tummy troubles or if it was just a toot. I don't know. I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, apparently she had to let out a nice silent fart with the whistle.
I mean, she was crafty.
She sure was. She was crafty. She used her resources to her advantage. So, guess there's that.
Your dad helping out with that too. With the whistle.
They need to come up with like a sign so that he knows when to blow the whistle because she's got a toot.
Yeah, like a specific cough or something really inconspicuous. Like she can just...
Ca-caw! She uses her pinky to itch her nose. It's got to be that. It's got to be super inconspicuous. That's a good one. Yeah. But it has to be the right pinky. You know?
What if she messes up? She does it with that left pinky. You got to remember.
I know. Mel, remember, right pinky? Mm-hmm. And you got to itch the tip of your nose.
Yeah.
It's just got to be like
don't
a little
itch. Put your finger in there.
No, no, no. Don't. That's picking your nose, and that's not what we're doing, Mel. You're we're too old scratching. For that.
It was a scratch.
But that, yeah, that's the story I have about Mel. Because apparently we don't talk about her enough.
She wanted a story, and she got it.
She got what she asked for, whether she likes it or not. My point is that she said we were selfish. But then I started thinking about it, and I'm like, but this is our podcast.
Yeah. If you want people to talk about you, make your own podcast.
Yeah. This is the Me and Amanda show. Mm-hmm. Bryce and Amanda show here. We talk about ourselves. But we're kind enough to tell fun stories about Mill and my dad.
You take what you get. And you don't say, what is your PG version?
You get what you get and don't throw a fit?
Yeah, that one. You get what you get and you don't throw a fit.
I didn't know that was the PG version, but I'm glad I knew what you were talking about. So, anyways, that's my stories. How are you?
I think I'm doing good. We finally got my car in the shop. That's what I was going to tell you.
Oh, that's exciting. It's only been
thank God, months. Months.
That broke down, what, in October?
I think so.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while.
Did they tell you how long it's going to take to fix it?
Absolutely no idea.
Okay, so it might be a few more months.
Mm-hmm. No. Because I've already paid them up front. And we still have money left in savings. So, like, we did really well. But,
So you said, here, take my money, but fix my car.
Yes. Okay. Well, he found, let's see, when it broke down, it had like 89,000 miles, and he found an engine he can replace with 28,000. And I was like, I'll bring you the money tomorrow. Order it, please.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, he did. And it came in Tuesday. Should have come in Tuesday. So we had it towed there Tuesday. And
okay.
Thank God. No more 4:30 mornings, 2 to 3, 4 times a week, some weeks.
Well, I mean, until you get your car back, you got to do those still.
Yeah. But there's a light at the end of that tunnel.
Yes, that's true.
Mm. That's my good news.
That's some exciting news you got there. Are you just so ready for no more early mornings? And once you have that, that means we don't have to wait for James to have an off night to record.
Yeah. Because I won't be getting home at 6:30.
Well, I mean, he might still be getting home at 6:30, but
that's his problem.
We can then, so if you guys don't know this, but typically before we even hit record, we start bullshitting or getting settled. Mm-hmm. Like tonight, well, I ate my dinner while we were bullshitting and Amanda was finishing adding pictures to the drive. And I don't think we really talked about, we talked about schedules and stuff.
Yeah.
So like, you know, that type of stuff. Nothing exciting. I mean, we might have... Oh, that's the other thing I got to mention. That I beat Cody home in a race.
Yeah.
But, you know, that type of thing. Like, we're not interesting. It's just... either it's us raging about something at work. Mm-hmm. Or us just getting settled.
I feel like we do a lot of raging.
I think it depends on the week. I feel like we go in spurts. Sometimes we rage really hard and sometimes we don't. I feel like it's really worse. It's worse for me right now because I'm hormonal pregnancy raging.
But you have that right. You're raging for three.
Yeah. Yeah. All three of us are angry. Or all three of us were just simply inconvenienced. Or all three of us are prangry at the moment.
You have a lot going on.
Yeah, we got a lot going on. So, you know. But yeah, we do a lot of that before we record. So even though we say we start recording at, I don't know, 7:30, it normally takes us half an hour to get set up.
Oh, at least. Whoops. I think it was closer to like 45 minutes tonight.
Was it? I don't feel like it. I mean, yeah, probably was.
Yeah.
No.
It's fine.
Yeah, I guess. It's fine. You know what? It is fine.
This is our us time.
This is our me time where we're working on other things. And we're doing our normal bitch sessions. But, okay, do you have anything else? Anything other than your car? Anything else exciting? New?
I think that's it. I feel like I've been pretty boring lately.
Okay. Well, I gotta tell the story about me beating Cody home.
Okay.
So we recorded 7:30 Amanda's time, 6:30 my time tonight. Specifically because I was like, oh, I forgot that we were recording and I set up a Sam's Club pickup order for between 6 to 7 for me. So we're starting at 6:30. I was like, okay, well, Cody's not gonna be home because of work or I don't know, whatever. So I went over to Sam's Club. I went when I got the text that said, hey, your order's ready. I left my house then, which was about 20 minutes to 6, right? I got there. They got all of the stuff in my car at 5:59.
Oh, they zippy.
I only remember because I was on the phone with Cody at the time because he's driving home from Salt Lake because he went down there for part of his day. Or up there for part of his day. And traffic was horrible.
I imagine it is around Salt Lake.
It was just... rush. First of all, it's rush hour traffic. He's like, I was going to start driving home at 4:15. But it told me I had an hour and 15 minute drive. And I'm like, so you waited for rush hour to start driving?
Did that add to his drive?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I was like, what sense does, if he's an hour and 15 minutes right now, or at 4:15, why wouldn't you leave at 4:15 and be home by like 5:30-ish?
Yeah, because you could potentially beat a good portion of the rush hour.
No, he waited till rush hour.
No. Okay.
And I was like, I don't understand your thought process. I was hoping the time, anyways, basically it elongated his time. That's a him problem.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time
it
I got
like it.
Well, by the time I got like all the stuff from Sam's Club, he was actually pretty close to where I was. But he was on the freeway and we started talking and he made it a race.
Okay.
So I'm like, all right. So I actually, normally when I go to Sam's Club, I take back roads, but I'm like, I'm going to get on the freeway and even the playing field. And so I got on the freeway and I'm on the phone with him this whole time. And I'm telling him where I'm at, and he's like, oh, I'm still an exit behind you, or whatever it is. But I'm like, I'm literally getting on the freeway to get off. Like, not even passing an exit. I'm getting on and getting off. And he really did catch up to me when I was getting off of the freeway. He saw me turn. Mm-hmm. But the issue is, I got all green lights up until one specific light. He was hitting all the red lights.
Oh, wow.
So he gets through that and then he catches up again. And I say catch up, like he better not be speeding. That's a work vehicle that he's driving. But he then sees me turn on and I turn onto a two lane, like, you know, there's two lanes going the way we were going, but he can't speed. And mm-hmm. He also can't get around the cars that are behind me, but in front of him. So by the time he got like directly behind me, I was turning onto a road that only had one lane for our direction, and there was no way for him to get around. And so...
So he's done for.
He lost.
He's down and out.
Yeah, and I was just cruising. I didn't care. He thinks I cheated, even though I didn't do anything.
How would you have cheated in that?
I don't know how I would have cheated, but he sure thinks I did.
I think he's a sore loser.
Not only that, is I also beat him in the house, and I had to get groceries out of the car. So I doubled that.
That feels like he did that on purpose.
It feels like he was lollygagging.
Yeah, he didn't want to help.
Well, I mean, he did get his one grocery out of the car. There weren't a lot.
What was the one grocery?
Case of Red Bull.
So his grocery. He got his own grocery out of the car.
Well, part of it is I had a box I could put everything in and take everything else in. I just didn't do the Red Bull because I was like, that's going to squish stuff.
And it's heavy.
Yeah. Well, it's not a huge case of Red Bull, but, okay. Point is that I got 99% of the groceries in and Maisie in the house before he entered the house. Oh, hold on. He would like to defend himself.
I was being a good Samaritan and helping the neighbor get his truck unlocked because he locked his keys in the truck. Yeah, thank you. Kiss my booty.
That's not true because...
What about your pregnant wife?
Amanda says, what about your pregnant wife?
That's cold. That's below the belt.
He's literally below the belt. They are.
I know.
Okay, no, they're not literally, but...
But what he doesn't realize is he was just talking to our neighbor for a second. He didn't go to help him first. He came in the house, put stuff down, and then went back out to help the neighbor.
He abandoned you in your time of need.
I mean, by this point, I already had the stuff in the house and was fine. But my point is...
But you still had to put it up.
Yeah, well, I put it down, and he put it away.
Okay.
So he got that part. But either way, I won the race, and I did not cheat. And he can say I cheated all he wants. But I want you to remember, I got my groceries in. And Maisie in, because Maisie goes on the Sam's Club runs with me all the time.
Oh, so what about the boys?
They couldn't come they can't because I need the groceries to go in the back. In the very back, okay. And they stay in the very back.
Oh, gotcha.
So they unfortunately don't get to do Sam's Club runs.
Poor boys. Nice. I'm sure they probably enjoy the time away from Maisie too, though.
Oh, I'm the quiet. Sure. As you see her run and jump on the couch next to me. She is ridiculous and clingy. It's fine. But anyways, that's my last story for tonight, I promise.
Well, if you want to tell us about socials, then I'll tell you a story.
Okay. I guess I shouldn't promise. That's not my last story. That's my last personal story tonight. I have one for you later. But we do... Yeah, I've got more. I did my job, guys, okay? But we do have Facebook, Instagram, X, Patreon, all the goodies. Facebook, Instagram, Helen Heels Podcast, X, Helen Heels Pod. We have Patreon up and going. We have our Discord up and going. So if you want to follow us on Patreon or become a Patreon or our Discord, you can join our Discord group as well. We also have our email up and going. So if you have any... suggestions, words of encouragement, complaints, you can send them our way. We're just going to laugh at them. But all of those, you can email us, hellonheelspodcast@gmail.com. If you're having an issue finding any of those things, links to anything, you can actually Google Hell on Heels Podcast link tree, and that will take you to all the links for all the things. That's it. That's all we got for socials. Actually, before, because I always forget, if you enjoy listening to us, make sure to tell your friends. Speaking of, who told their friend in Mississippi?
Oh my God, we got Mississippi, guys.
Mississippi, we've always given a hard time because it's always right around Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked today and we got some Mississippi action going.
Mississippi's here for us.
Yeah, so whoever told your friend in Mississippi, keep doing it. Keep spreading the word. But other than that, I know I'm not ready for a story because you've already kind of warned me.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to like this one.
Can I go into pictures yet or no?
Yeah, you can go ahead. I don't think that you're going to like this one. And also it's 10 pages. So I went kind of hard on this one.
Oh, okay. So we need to get started.
Okay. So I'm going to tell you about Daniel LaPlante tonight. We don't know much about his childhood because when his crime started, he was a minor. So a lot of that was sealed. There's also a ton of misinformation on this case. It's been very, not scandalized, like when people add to it.
Dramatized.
Yeah, dramatized. There's another word that I'm looking for that starts with an S, but so I got the majority of my info from newspaper clippings and a couple articles. One main article that I pulled info from is titled "A True and Suspenseful Horror Tale of Haunting Homicides and the Hunt for a Triple Murderer, Daniel LaPlante, as Told by the Cops That Were There." It's a long title, okay?
Yeah, you see?
But it was written by retired Lieutenant Thomas Lane of Pepperell PD, and you can find it on the CelticSentinel.com. It's a basketball website. Don't know why this was on there, but it was interesting nonetheless.
Okay.
So, Daniel LaPlante, he went by Danny, but I'm not going to call him that because he sucks. He was born on May 15th in 1970 in Townsend, Massachusetts. He lived with his mother, Elaine Moore, and her husband, Daniel's stepfather, and he had several siblings. The house in the yard he grew up in was, it was gross. It was filthy. It was described as kind of like a junkyard. It was cluttered with just...
junk?
Junk. Yeah, junk. And old cars. As a child, Daniel suffered sexual, physical, and psychological abuse at the hands of his father. He was diagnosed with dyslexia as a child. He didn't have many friends. A neighbor said that he was strange and disturbed. One neighbor, Elaine Au, I think is how you say it, she was quoted in a newspaper saying, "When you saw Danny, you watched him. He earned his reputation. He was a troublemaker from day one."
That seems a little harsh.
Okay.
Seems a little harsh just because he's had a troubled childhood.
He has.
But, I mean, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Like, at this age, it probably wasn't his fault.
I mean, it's still his fault. Like, he has to have consequences to it. But he's
absolutely,
also...
absolutely, but, like...
he's also learning from his father who's abusing him, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At this, what age was it again? Where would he be?
It was as a child. So before he was a teenager, for sure.
So, you know, this age, like, let's just say 10, throwing it out there.
Yeah.
You can really probably blame more the father because they're not. But as they get older, it turns into their responsibility because they don't learn from, you know? Yeah. I'm just saying. I'm throwing it out there. There is some responsibility on his crappy father.
Yes, not his fault is... Okay, I shouldn't say not his fault. I think it's more, yeah. It makes sense, I guess. Like, he's got troubles.
It's a learning issue, and he's learning to be like his father.
Mm-hmm. Jill Jerry was another neighbor who had a greenhouse with her husband. And when Danny was 6, they hired him to just pick up rocks from the fields where they grew their squash and their pumpkins. And she said one day she goes out there and Daniel just smashed all of the crops up. Just all the pumpkins and squash. He had just destroyed them.
Okay, I'm going to say that kind of feels like... You said he was 6?
He was 6.
That kind of feels like he was just bored and having some fun. Because I feel like, maybe this is just me, but I feel like boys like smashing things, right? Like they smash pumpkins or smash whatever. And he was curious, and it was fun the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that he shouldn't do it, but I kind of feel like...
toddlers are just going to... I mean, I know a 6-year-old isn't a toddler, but, like, kids at that age are just going to get up to mischief.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's the age when they color on the walls if you leave them alone for too long.
Right. And I just feel like that was him, like, oh, maybe he accidentally stepped on one, and was like, oh, that was kind of fun. Or whatever, and kept doing it, and was like, "Oh, this is fun." It's like building a Lego set and then destroying it, like Godzilla.
That's exactly what that was like, actually. Only it was squash and
I just imagine him. I'm imagining like Lilo and Stitch with Stitch building the city and him just, you know, destroying it.
Oh, I am 100% imagining Godzilla right now, just destroying all the produce.
Anyways, that's how we see things. Again, 6 years old. Should he have done it? No. But I feel like any 6 year old might have thought, oh, this is kind of fun, and maybe didn't realize the ramifications of doing it. Especially okay. if you're not in a family that gardens.
Okay. I see your point.
So.
He also had trouble in school. He was called creepy and weird when he was in high school. He was a C student. He ran track. He played football. And he was described as a loner. He didn't like going to parties. He never really talked much. The few friends that he did have, they claimed to have lost contact with him after he left school. And eventually, based on his behavior, the school stepped in and made him see a psychiatrist. And this, some sources said this was due not only to him just being kind of reclusive, but also gross. Like, he didn't want to shower. He did not care about his physical appearance whatsoever. So he was forced to see a psychiatrist from the school.
You know what? Thank God nobody comes to my house while I'm working. I might have showered today, but my hair did not get washed, okay?
Oh, I do not wash this every 7 days a week. Are you out of your mind? No.
Yeah. Thank goodness no one can force a psychiatrist on me for that right now.
So Daniel was diagnosed as having a hyperactivity disorder. And after he had been seeing the psychiatrist for a while, the psychiatrist started making sexual advances towards Daniel, and he sexually abused him for the next year.
Hold on. That.
Yeah.
Sir or madam? I don't know.
I believe, from what I read, it was a sir.
Let's
this
just
is
make it...
two trusted men in this boy's life that have abused him in absolutely horrendous ways.
I just, in my mind, he probably also had opened up to some extent about his father's abuse. And I feel like that psychiatrist probably took advantage of that.
Yeah, it's a psychiatrist. So he's going to be ridiculously vulnerable with him.
Right. And that's why I'm like, you very much took advantage of your position there in that child's life instead of, I don't know, doing your job and helping.
Daniel started breaking into people's houses and stealing things in his early teenage years. And from this, he would start messing with their things too. So it was said that he would steal things from one house and then break into another house and leave those things there. Or he would move stuff around so you would know someone was there, but it wasn't like blatantly obvious. One thing he was said to do was like take a drink or a glass of milk or something and drink half of it and leave the rest of it there. So you get home and you're like, did I leave this milk out?
So he's like moving everything 2 inches to the left.
Yeah, he's doing shit like that. Like, he's just messing with their brains.
You know what? He seems to have a little bit of a sense of humor, though. Not that it's great to steal stuff and then put them in other people's houses, but it is kind of funny. Think about if one day you woke up and you're like, my favorite gnome is gone, but there is this weird dog statue I've never seen.
So, let me tell you about it.
Oh, okay.
In 1986, Daniel was 16 years old when he broke into the home of single father Francis Frank Bowen, or Bowen. I believe it's pronounced Bowen. I don't know. I'm saying Bowen. He lived with his two daughters, Tina and Karen. And I wanted to take a note here. Newspapers listed this family as the dad, Frank, and his daughters, Tina and Karen. A lot of sources refer to this family as Brian, Annie, and Jessica Andrews. And it was specifically the Boston Globe. I read a bunch of different news or articles. where these are the names that were used, and I believe they were used on Lieutenant Lane's website, his article too. So I'm using the Bowens names.
Okay.
The girls had been telling their father that weird stuff was happening around the house, right? Strange noises. When they left the room and came back, the TV would randomly change channels, or items would be moved around the room. Their drinks would be half gone. And Frank kind of just passed it off as his daughter's imagining things, like I feel like a lot of dads do.
Dad?
Until, Dad, this is for you, Podfather. Until December 8th of 1986, police got a call that the Bowen family was being held hostage in their own home. Frank, Tina, Karen, and the girls' friend Kathleen Knapp were all held hostage in the house, and Tina was able to escape through a window and run to the neighbors for help. So they were all unharmed, but the intruder had just disappeared. Police were not able to find them. Frank told the police that when he, his girls, and their friend had gotten home, they noticed things were out of place, and somebody had used the toilet and not flushed.
Okay, people, first of all, we had that with my last story, too. Nasty.
Mm-hmm. Gross.
What is wrong with people?
Frank, he saw this, and he was like, not in my house. So he starts looking around the house, and he finds a man in the closet. And he has dark spiked hair, a painted face. He was wearing a hairy jacket, and he had a wrench in one hand and a hatchet in the other hand. And the hatchet actually belonged to Frank. Frank later told police that he kept it on his nightstand for protection. But when he finds this man in the closet, Frank said that he very calmly ordered all four of the victims into one bedroom. And eventually, we know, Tina was able to escape out the window, and she ran to the neighbors to call the police. Police get there. Sorry, go ahead.
I just want to say, in my funny scenario, I'm not lurking around the house. I'm just moving around garden statues, okay?
That's fine. Don't come in my house. Like, you do it in the yard, I'm going to laugh. I'm going to be like, what the hell? That was a flamingo last week. I know it was.
I'm going to look down the road and be like, why does Karen have my gnome on a floaty? I want that back. Karen, is this yours? Look, tradesies, okay? Don't take my crap again. What the
hell, Karen?
And she's probably like, why do you have my flamingo? Or maybe she's looking across the street going, Kevin has my flamingos. And I'm like, I don't care about your flamingos. I want my floaty.
We're just meeting up at the mailboxes every morning to be like, here, Bryce, I got your gnome again. Does anybody have my flamingo? Oh, I thought I saw it in Jill's yard.
But Jill came out and took it into the house for some reason. I don't know.
I don't know. Jill. Police searched this home. Both officers, and they even brought out a canine unit, and they didn't find anybody. So they have no idea where he goes. They assume he flees, and they don't know. Frank described this intruder as approximately 22 years old. Tina claimed he was 6 foot tall and between 17 and 26 years old. And after this happened, the family, they got the hell out of that house.
I mean, can you blame them?
Absolutely not. Some sources stated that they went to a hotel and stayed there for a couple nights, which is another possibility why their names could have potentially been changed to protect them. I don't, it's there, but whatever. And 2 days later, Frank goes back to the house because he's got to get some, you know, personal items. When he sees a face staring at him through the window from inside his house.
Nope.
It was the man that had held them hostage.
Still so, in the house?
Still in the
house. Is he like climbing in the attic?
No. So Frank calls the police again, and the police respond, and he gave the key to Officer Benzinson.
Okay.
Right? Okay. I don't know how to say this name. Benzinson. Benzinson. But look, Officer B.
Okay.
So he looks around a little bit and he doesn't see any footprints in the snow. So he goes inside the house and he sees a knife sticking out of the wall It had been stabbed through a family photo, and written on the wall in red marker was, "I'm still here, come find me."
No, thank you. You can have the house.
Another photo on a different wall also had a knife sticking out of it, and it says, "I'm going to kill you all." So Officer Benzinson calls for backup. And when the two other officers responded, they all three go in and they're searching the house again. And they discover nothing.
Okay, so like, where is he?
That's what they were thinking. They were pretty much like, we have to be missing something. There's nowhere he could have gone. And Officer Benzinson, he was unwilling to give up. They never saw him leave the house. So they're thinking, you know, that he has to be in this house somewhere. Benzinson finally noticed a cosmetic wall in the bathroom. And the only thing this wall was for was to hide the pipes and just make it look more aesthetic, I guess. So I have included a picture of a nice little triangle there. Benzinson looks in this space and he said he saw what looked like a pile of clothes. He immediately pulled out his pistol and pointed it at Daniel's head. And he told him, "Let me see your hands or I'll splatter your brains all over that wall."
Fair.
Benzinson said, as he held his gun to this boy's head and said that to him, he was still completely calm. Just no reaction, just chill, just hanging out. He said he just looked at him from the corner of his eye, which has to be the most unsettling thing mm-hmm. ever. This is a kid. This is a child. He's 16.
Mm-hmm.
This area that I'm showing you the picture of, that this is where Daniel was found. And it was just big enough for him to sit and sleep in a crouched position.
Okay. Look, he's crossing a line by just being there as a squatter.
Yeah.
Literal squatter.
Yes.
He must have had some thighs of steel there.
To get into this area, he had to jump into the house's foundation, squeeze through a narrow opening, and then jump down to the cellar floor. Now, Tom Lane, not me, so you can probably trust it, he did the math to figure out like how it was possible. And he said at 5'8", not 6 foot, and 135 pounds, Daniel could have squeezed through an opening as small as 7.5 inches. Ah. 7.5 inches, I Googled it, is a standard number 2 pencil before it's sharpened.
So, like, I would need 3 or 4 of those before I could squeeze through anything.
Yes. You'd need a couple of standard number I mean, hell, I would need a couple of standard number 2 pencils, but, like, he squeezed in this little gap and then just hung out in their bed. Oh.
But he was also going in and out of it, though. So he was
going
in and out of it at a semi-regular, interval. But, okay, that's where I'm saying I thought he was leaving the house, okay? I thought he was going to the Wilson's house. Grabbing some of Pam's underwear and putting it in the Jenkins house so that
Jenkins how he started. You're not wrong. That's how he started.
Okay.
Yeah. And he just kept escalating. But this is how he gained access to this house, this tiny little opening.
I'm so uncomfortable with that.
Daniel was very obviously arrested and he was held in a juvenile detention facility.
Rightfully so.
And George Joseph Travelin, he set his bond at $10,000, taking into account the risk of the defendant fleeing, the type of crime alleged, and the dangerousness of the defendant. Oh, and the safety of the community.
Oh, okay. I guess the safety of the community counts for something.
On October 9th, 1987, he was released on this bail. He got out. And pretty immediately, he started right back over again, breaking into houses, stealing from these houses. He obviously learned his lesson.
Well, duh. Don't get caught.
At some point, he acquired a gun It's the thought that he stole it from one of these houses. And it was said that he got bullets by lying to one of his brother's friends. Not real sure what he told him. That's what the court documents said, that he just lied to his brother's friend. Maybe he told him he was going to do, you know, target practice or something.
Wrong type of target practice, my friend.
Yes. On November 16th, Daniel broke into the home of Andrew and Priscilla Gustafson. And, I mean, he was doing his normal thing, being a creep and a thief. But he went back to their house on December 1st, 1987. And this time, he broke into this house and he was armed. Andrew was at work and Priscilla and her two children were out of the house. And when Daniel eventually heard Priscilla and her son entering the house, his first thought was to jump out a window. But he didn't. He changed his mind.
I wish he would have jumped out the window.
I really wish he would have jumped out the window and broke his neck. He pulled the gun on him and led them both to the bedroom. He locked William in a closet and tied Priscilla to the bed, where he then raped her and shot her twice in the head through a pillow. Then he took William to the bathroom and drowned him in the bathtub. When he went downstairs, he ran into Abigail Gustafson, who was last seen walking home from the bus stop at the end of the road. And he was said to have lured her into the bathroom and drowned her as well.
And these are pretty young children.
Mm-hmm.
How old were William and...
I'm about to tell you.
Oh, okay.
After Daniel left the house, he went home, ate dinner, and went to his niece's birthday party. At about 5 o'clock, some sources said 5:20 p.m., Andrew Gustafson returned home. And he came home to no lights on in the house, which he said was really strange because his family should be there by now. He had tried to call his wife earlier in the day, but he wasn't able to get a hold of her. He came home and found the body of 33-year-old Priscilla in their bed on her back with the pillow over her face. And he immediately called the police. Later, while in court, the assistant district attorney asked Andrew why he didn't look for his children. And Andrew said that he was afraid to look for his children because he was scared to find them dead.
I think that's pretty valid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I also feel like he probably had some sense that they either they weren't there. Because if they came in and heard him, they're going to recognize their dad's voice. Though there is a chance they're scared and going to continue to hide. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if they had come in and heard him and were like, oh my God, that's dad, they would have rushed to him.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think I think a part of him probably knew. When police arrived, they found the bodies of the Gustafson children. Abigail was 7 years old and she was found downstairs in the bathtub. And autopsies also found compression on her neck and blunt force trauma to the head. So they believed that she fought back. William was 5 years old and he was found upstairs in a bathroom. I tried to find what specifically led police to suspecting Daniel, but from what I found in a newspaper article, they never released that information. But that same article it was a 1987 issue of the Boston Globe, they did say that the Gustafson home was only about 2 miles from Daniel LaPlante's home, and he had just gotten out of jail. So sounds like a pretty good lead.
Mm-hmm.
They issued a warrant and a manhunt ensued. They canvassed the area. They were showing people photos of Daniel and his very recent mugshots. They received calls from people reportedly seeing him and were able to kind of track where his movements were like that. And they searched the woods in the area as well. And during their search, Lieutenant Lane, he said he was actually waved down by a woman who had just gotten home. And she asked if he minded walking her in the house. And he was like, you know what, this might, you know, mess up the case a little bit. He said something about like it affecting, I guess, the groundwork, them trying to find him. Mm-hmm. But he was like, you know, this is valid though. Like, I can help this woman in her house.
Yeah.
So he did decide to walk her inside while the other officer stayed with the car. and the woman's name was Lynn McGovern. Not long after walking into the McGovern house, Lieutenant Lane heard a noise upstairs, and as he was checking it out, he found a 16-gauge shotgun at the top of the stairs. Daniel LaPlante was in that house, and he was waiting on that woman to come home.
So maybe it was like a gut feeling that he needed to help her, too.
Yeah. Like, it's just kind of strange that, for whatever reason, the lady didn't want to go in the house by herself, which people can be like, oh, she was overreacting. Clearly, she wasn't.
Right. Also, if, like, they've heard the news, like, a manhunt's already ensuing. Yeah, she's
in your neighborhood.
Right, and she's probably like, I'm not comfortable if she lives alone.
No, well, she had a family, but she got home before her husband did.
So, I'm not comfortable going into this house.
Yeah. And it's a good thing she did.
Oh, Lord.
Daniel was able to jump out of a window and climb down from the roof of the garage, and he escaped into the woods. And later when they searched this area, police would find an ammunition belt containing 15 rounds of 16-gauge shotgun shells that had presumably been ditched in the woods near her house. Later, I believe it was that same night, it was kind of confusing to see, but later on in the search, Pam McCullough had entered her home on 17 Elm Street to find Daniel LaPlante inside with a gun. He demanded that she was going to drive him out of the area because Bryce, he doesn't have his driver's license.
Okay, like that matters to you at this point.
You killed almost an entire family and you're worried about not having your learner's permit? Stupid. This is when his true self comes out. Before they could leave, the phone rang and Daniel instructed Pam to answer it, and it was a family member on the other side of the line that was calling to warn her about the manhunt for Daniel LaPlante. Okay. What the hell do you even say in that situation as he's just staring you in the face with a gun pointed at you?
Right.
Pam does end up driving Daniel away from the house, but they were still on Elm Street when she jumped out of the vehicle and got help from a man that she saw talking to a parked car. According to this, to Lieutenant Lane, he was in the parked car, a police officer.
He's just getting all these breaks. Like,
yes.
He's getting lucky, but unlucky at the same time.
Yeah. He said that it was nighttime, so she didn't even realize that he was a cop, but he got as much, he said he got a lot of information from her, especially considering that it just happened. And he said he quickly called in with a description of the car Daniel was in, Bryce. This, he made his getaway in a bright orange Volkswagen van with two for sale signs in the windows.
Okay, we got to choose our getaway cars a little bit better.
He might as well have been driving a neon sign. He was seen driving the car in Ayer, Massachusetts, and he ditched it, so another hunt was on, and they eventually found him hiding in the dumpster like the trash that he is. He was arrested, and when they strip-searched him, he admitted to having a gun in the crotch of his underwear.
I'm not looking for that. No, thank you.
Yeah, no. I'm not doing it. I'm sure they had to draw straws on that one.
They were like, no, Jerry, it's your turn. I did it last week.
You're the rookie. You have to do this.
Look, you didn't have to deal with him the first time he came in, okay? I did,
and I told y'all not to let him out on bail. But here we are.
Here we are. What do you expect to happen?
In 1988, Daniel LaPlante was sentenced to 3 consecutive life sentences for the murder of the Gustafsons. He had, oh my gosh, he went through multiple appeals. He had a resentencing hearing March of 2017 where he argued for a shorter sentence since he was a minor at the time of the murders.
I don't care.
He tried to use a law at the time. I had read somewhere that it's since been done away with. But at the time, there was a law that gave minors a chance for parole after 15 years served. Daniel's lawyer listed some of his accomplishments in prison, like earning his high school equivalency diploma, I don't care, tutoring other inmates, whatever, assuming leadership roles in prison groups, and completing college-level courses. Again, I don't give a shit about any of this. I don't care how great he's doing in prison, where he doesn't have a choice but to do well.
I mean, he does, he could just go be a dink and... Anyways, I'll keep that opinion in.
Court papers also say that they did argue that LaPlante was subjected to extreme psychological abuse. Fair. Okay.
But there are a lot of people that are subjected to that as well. That
exactly.
Don't turn into... We say this every single time.
Mm-hmm.
They don't turn into murderers or garbage people.
Yeah.
Yeah, they might struggle, but they don't kill people.
Mm-hmm. Now, Daniel did apologize to the families of the victims. He said, "I murdered 3 innocent people. I do not have the words to fully express my profound sorrow, but I'm truly sorry for the harm that I have caused."
What lawyer and wrote that for him?
Well, he said this with his back to the families. So I feel like that's, no. You look him in the face and tell him this.
Again, what lawyer wrote that for him?
Gustafson's sister, Christine, she spoke at the hearing and asked whose life wasn't worthy of 15 years. Is it Priscilla's? Is it Abby's? Or is it little Billy's? That, like, kind of hit for me. After a forensic psychiatrist evaluated Daniel and said that he was not remorseful for his actions, to be fair, I did read that another psychiatrist argued before the defense and said there is no test to see if somebody is remorseful or not. But regardless, in the end, the judge was like, no, we're good with the sentence you already had. So he is still serving his 3 consecutive life sentences. He's eligible for parole in 2033, and he would be 62 years old.
Sucks to be him.
Mm-hmm.
I hope his hips hurt. I hope his knees give out.
Yeah.
I don't like him.
I'm really glad to be done with the story, because it was... Ugh, I didn't like it.
I don't like him.
No.
Because just there's so much. I understand that he had psychological trauma as a child and then was abused as a teen by that psychiatrist, and I'm sure that didn't help. But my God, this is a lot. Just squatting in people's houses so that you can, freak them out for days on end? And on top of that, he was still 16. Did his parents not wonder where he was?
That was unclear. I know he lived with his stepfather, so his mother did remarry, and I didn't see anything negative, per se, about them. I think, really, this was maybe just a different time. And this was the 70s, 80s.
Kids could just be gone for days at a time in the 70s and 80s, and no one would bat an eye.
I don't know. Someone from the 70s or 80s, let us know.
Dad?
Hey, I feel Dad. But in that time, you know, boys will be boys was still prevalent.
I just still feel like someone had to have been like, where the heck is this kid?
Oh, he's probably stealing planters again. I don't know.
He's squashing gourds.
And I did add one more picture of, it's a more current picture.
I'm glad he's balding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He hasn't aged well.
He just doesn't look...
He doesn't look like he cares.
No. He doesn't look like he feels anything at all. He looks bored and pissed off being there.
Again, like that, I get that could be psychological, but there's people to help. But then again, the people that were supposed to help him the first time didn't.
Yeah, that's why I'm really, really torn on this one, because I'm like, I can't... What am I going to do? Tell him to go get a psychiatrist? How do you... I can't fault him for, you know, not wanting to go to one ever again. So it's it's kind of torn. But like you said, this other people have shitty lives too, and they don't turn around and do this.
Mm-hmm.
But like, shitty life is an understatement, but
I just
he still murdered innocent people, children.
I mean, not just that, though. He also raped the mother.
Mm-hmm. In front of her son, no less. Like, not directly in front, but...
He was there, yeah.
Yeah, he was in the closet.
And I feel like that was a power thing for him. Like, he'd had his power taken away, so now he... Like, if he hadn't been caught, I can see that becoming a trend for him.
Yeah.
He gained that power by force.
And what would he have done in the other situations?
Exactly. So, I don't like him.
No, I don't either.
He sucks. And he looks gross and old.
Ugh. Well, that's Daniel LaPlante.
Okay, well, screw him. Let's go on to a better story that doesn't anger me.
Right.
What?
I need to know about this mustache.
Okay.
And those eyebrows. What are his genetics?
Let me just tell you. I didn't expect for this story to turn and kind of focus a little bit on one specific person, but we kind of love him. And let me just tell you, it's been a minute since I have done just a good old haunting.
Ooh, okay.
And so we're going to be talking about the Bullock Hotel today. I'm also going to tell you, I haven't, the Bullock Hotel, Bullock.
Okay. I thought you said Bullet. Okay. I'm with you.
No, Bullock. I haven't read these notes since it's been a week.
Okay.
So if I've forgotten anything or my notes in here, so sorry. Point being is that we pushed this off because Amanda's internet was out and all that fun stuff. So on the corner of Wall Street and Main Street in Deadwood, South Dakota, sits the Bullock Hotel. The Bullock Hotel was built by Seth Bullock, who is the man you are inquiring about. And it was built between the years of 1894 to 1896. Now, that's when the hotel itself was built. Seth Bullock, he was the first sheriff for Deadwood, South Dakota.
So he was a sheriff.
Yeah, so he was a sheriff. No biggie. Okay. The very first sheriff.
Oh, okay. He was the sheriff.
The sheriff. Reportedly, he was appointed sheriff after the death of Wild Bill Hickok. And the town folks after his death, they're like, we need some law and order. And they nominated him. The reports state that he had actually only been in Deadwood for several days when the death of Wild Bill Hickok happened. And then several months later, he would take over as sheriff. So, like, he made an impression, okay?
It sounds like it. It sounds like they were like, this is bull. We need to do something. You look great. What's your name? That you'll do.
They're like, look at those brows, man.
Like, you really can't argue with this man's facial hair.
No, you can't. And look, like, his nose, he just looks like he is a law-abiding citizen.
He is no nonsense. He can smell crime.
Exactly. He's a crime sniffer through and through.
Yes.
So, previously, the Bullock Hotel had actually been a warehouse. The reports state were originally built and owned by Seth Bullock and partner Sol Star. So according to the reports, the duo would move their hardware store from Helena, Montana to Deadwood, South Dakota. Reportedly, the night they arrive in town, they literally start working. They're like auctioning off equipment that they brought, supplies they brought with them. Like, they're hardworking people. Like, I want to call that out. These guys get to Deadwood and they're like, time to start working. Not only just working, but apparently making impressions, because they're like, you're 2 days in, you could be sheriff.
Here's a nice shiny badge.
Here you go. So within the first year of them being there, they actually buy a lot and build a new hardware store and warehouse. And that was in the 1870s, from what I could find. In 1879, the building would catch fire, and this is while it is a hardware store and warehouse. It catches fire, it would survive, continue to operate as the hardware store until the Deadwood fires of 1894. So in 1894, the town would suffer these devastating fires. The hardware store would actually be destroyed at this fire.
The report made it so long.
I know, right? Reports stated that only the brick warehouse stood at the rear of the building after the fire. Anything else was gone.
Oh.
And so essentially the fire destroyed the two-story wood frame that was the hardware store.
Okay.
So, the sheriff and the hardware store owner, they've got a decision. They're like, well, do we rebuild our hardware store? Like, what do we do? What's the plan from here? Because they're successful. They're not doing bad for themselves.
Yeah.
And Bullock and his partner Sol, they're just like, let's just change tactics. Switch gears. We don't need to be hardware store owners, guys. Nay, not in the cards for us. Instead, let's convert what used to be the hardware store to a 3-story luxury hotel.
Oh, okay. So they're moving on up.
Yes, they're like, we're gonna make this fancy. It's gonna be talk of the town, talk of the nation.
We're gonna have velvet.
Yes. We're going to have everything we need to make this fancy. And they do. So it's remodel time, right?
Okay.
And that's why the dates for the Bullock Hotel say it was built between the years 1894 to 1896. Fires happened in 94, renovations started, and then completed sometime in 1896.
Got you. Okay.
Now, the new construction, it's believed to be decorated in like this Italian or Victorian style, like very fancy, guys.
It is bougie.
It's bougie. Now on the main floor, the hotel holds a large dining room with a kitchen, obviously. It's a restaurant, right? And the restaurant could seat up to 100 customers. It offered some serious delicacies at this restaurant, including pheasant and lobster.
Ooh, oh, okay.
I don't
in know. South Dakota? Where do you get lobster in South Dakota in the 1800s?
I don't know, but they're doing it.
Okay.
I didn't know pheasant was a delicacy.
I feel like, is it now? Like, maybe it was now. Back then.
I don't know, but I have never heard of it being a delicacy. But it was listed as one of their, it's just their fancy food, right?
Yeah.
So, like, it's top tier, and, I mean, they've got a lot of stuff. So, like, obviously, the large dining room, since it can fit 100 customers. There's also what they call a sample room, and salesmen could store their cases there. I didn't get clarity on what exactly that meant. I'm not sure if it was alcohol cases.
Yeah.
Or, like, a cellar type thing.
That's what I'm imagining. Like the guys that you like, the traveling salesmen that open up the little boxes, and they have like all these tinctures and, you know, fancy spring waters and stuff like that.
That's what I'm imagining, but I didn't get clarity.
Okay, that's what we're gonna go with. It's all the fancy boxes that you open this and then twist this and turn this and
while the salesman went to dinner, you know, it was fine. Yeah. So. It also boasted a grand lobby, had a fancy piano, because, you know, it's not luxury without a piano in the main lobby or in the grand lobby.
You have to have somebody tickling the ivories.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or you can't just hold your nose up when you walk.
Yeah. And then, you know, first floor had just the other typical hotel offices. The second and third stories are originally said to have held 63 luxury rooms.
Oh, that's bigger than this looks for some reason.
Well, keep in mind, their luxury rooms at the time did not have in-room bathrooms, but each floor had a shared bathroom.
They were very shivered.
Well, okay, 1894, okay.
I know. One shared bathroom?
Uh-huh. For each floor.
Ooh. Yeah, but that's still like 30 rooms, right? Or is it 63 rooms per floor?
30 rooms.
Okay, so one bathroom for 30, oh my God, in the 1800s? Oh my God. Everybody's sick. Everybody has, oh my God.
Well, the rooms themselves were very nicely decorated. They had libraries and a parlor and balconies. Like this was top of the line for the 1894. Okay. Now, with all of these fancy amenities, this actually became a very sought after hotel for the area. So I guess they're doing something right. Like they're making it.
It's got to be the velvet.
Got to be. Yeah, and it did say they had, like, the red velvet carpeting and, like, it was very fancy, guys.
This is, like, top-tier cowboy stuff.
Yeah. Oh, and the area was considered, like, Wild West.
So it's like, this is, like, a fancy hotel in a boomtown?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's fancy.
Yeah. It's fancy, okay. Guys. So with all these amenities, very sought after. They were doing something right. In 1900, a small adjoining building to the south would be purchased by Seth Bullock. And this would become a gentleman's bar.
Oh, and what is a gentleman's bar?
I have no idea. I use their wording of a gentleman's bar. I envision there is some brothel-y type activities going on, but that's not confirmed. That's me assuming the worst.
That's what I think of as well.
It more than likely was a spot where only men went, smoke, drink, that type of thing. And brothel-y activities. So, like, at this point, Seth is just running the town, essentially. He's sheriff. He's got the luxury hotel. He's doing well. Or he was. He was at the top of his hotel game.
He was.
And I guess his gentleman's bar game. Okay. And that was until 1919. Because in September of 1919, Seth Bullock, he would pass of cancer in his own home.
Oh.
Though there are reports that claim he passed in the hotel. The more trustworthy ones I could find all said it was in his own home, and the reports of him dying in the hotel are false.
I feel like I would rather him die in the comfort of his home.
Yeah. So, hotel, you know, it's been renovated. It's still operating until 1976, when the hotel is sold to the Iris family. And the, I don't know if it's Iris or Eris. I don't know. It's the family. They purchase this. They actually convert the building to a hardware store.
Full circle.
A full circle.
100 years, full circle.
Right? So the building, it would undergo renovations by the new owners, obviously. And they would sell off basically all of the original furniture, rip out a whole bunch of stuff, make this work as a hardware store. And it would stay as a hardware store until 1991, when the building is again sold.
Oh, okay.
Now the building is undergoing renovations by the new owners. And between 1991 and 1993, the hotel would undergo very extensive renovations meant to recreate the original atmosphere and decor of the Bullock Hotel.
Bryce, stop it.
Yeah. So hardware store, hotel, hardware store, hotel.
So this building is over 100 years old.
Uh-huh.
Has been, I would say, completely remodeled 4 times and has only changed once.
Yeah, it's gone through its phases, okay?
Okay.
So they are trying to bring back the glamour of the 1890s at this point. They're like, wow, this was really great. Like, this was top tier.
Bring that damn velvet back.
Right. Now, the decor was originally believed to include, like, iron and brass beds, fancy oak furnishings, just all sorts of things. But everything was sold when the Aris family purchased it in 1976. So they don't have the originals, nor do they have the best pictures to confirm that that's what was used. So they're going off of what they can find. Okay. And for the most part, the current owners state that the hotel has been, quote, carefully restored based on the best available information regarding the late 1800s and by uncovering details that gave clues as the original decor.
I mean, honestly, that sounds kind of fun.
They're trying, and I appreciate them for it. They're like, look, we want the 1800s. We're getting the 1800s. We're doing what we can. So while they did try to keep the building true to what they knew of it being in the late 1800s, there were some changes that had to be made. Some ceilings were lowered due to heat accumulation. I'm sorry. Some ceilings were lowered due to heat accumulation at the ceilings. They had to strip some paint. They had any remaining woodwork was restained. They repapered the ceilings that are meant to reflect, like, that what they put up was meant to reflect the Bullock's original Victorian designs.
Okay.
48-inch solid brass chandeliers were introduced as light fixtures, and they are replicas from the period, which they believe to very closely match what the Bullock would have originally had.
Okay.
The kitchen and dining room, they were reopened as a restaurant and a bar, The restaurant is called Bullies.
Yeah.
Now, this is where it got a little confusing, and I didn't get a lot of clarity, because for me, that sounds like it's named after Seth Bullock, right?
Yeah. Oh, I thought that's what that Bullock. Was, yeah.
Reportedly, this is named after Seth Bullock's good bud, Teddy Roosevelt.
Why is it Bully?
I'm not sure how that reflects back to Teddy Roosevelt.
Are you telling me he was a bully? In school? Did he give wedgies?
Yes.
And swirlies? Teddy Roosevelt? He didn't say a bear or whatever. He actually gave that. He gave Jimmy a swirly in second grade.
No, it basically, Seth Bullock was part of Teddy Roosevelt's infantry, his command that he had. And so they were friends, but I still don't understand how Bullies references Teddy Roosevelt, and I couldn't find anyone to explain it for me.
Maybe we're not meant to. Maybe it's an old inside joke, and we're just looking in on the outside.
Probably. It's okay. But then you also have Seth Cellar that would be renovated and open and act as, I think, a bar, mm-hmm. a wedding venue, a meeting space, banquets, and other events. I believe, from what I could find, I believe this is that special room salesmen could put their stuff in.
Okay.
But this is in the basement, so it's, you know, it's a big space, basically. Now, the Bullocks reportedly, or the Bullock reportedly had 63 rooms originally. That was reduced to 28 in the restoration.
Ooh.
From what I read, this is because some rooms just had, like, odd shapes, odd angles. They also added in-room bathrooms. They don't have to share a potty anymore.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so they expanded, just made it a little bit better. So they did have to cut back on the number of rooms. And like I said, they did put plumbing in all the rooms. They no longer have to share. In some of the fancier rooms, they even have jacuzzis and wet bars in them.
Ooh, okay.
And they added a casino. Not in the rooms, on the first floor.
Each individual room has its own craps table. It's the craziest thing.
That's why it went down to 28 rooms, guys. And so they also added the casino. Now, the casino, like, passing the law to allow casinos was fairly recent when this was originally bought. It was within years for South Dakota that law was introduced, that they could have a casino and gambling.
I feel like that was probably really... had to be in the hotel originally.
The casino?
Yeah. No, they didn't gamble or anything?
I'll explain, because I can tell you they believe they know Seth Bullock's... Let's just put it this way. They believe Seth Bullock frowns upon the casino.
Oh, okay.
They don't believe he likes it.
He was sheriff, so...
Exactly. That's why there wasn't a casino.
Oh, okay.
He whipped that town into shape, okay? And he would not allow a casino, a law-breaking casino, in his hotel.
Yeah, that's right. He can smell crime. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Whenever I think of, like, the Wild West, I guess I just think of, like, Tombstone and debauchery and gambling. So.
Not with Seth in charge. He was, like, absolutely not.
He was a no Bullocks kind of man.
Exactly. I got you. I see what you did there. So with such a devout creator and the age of this place, it's, you know, it's bound to be haunted. Note that there are a lot of reports that claim that Seth, I've already mentioned this, that he died in the hotel, but the more trustworthy historical reports show he did die in his own home. But that doesn't stop, you know, where he dies doesn't stop him from putting his heart and soul into something. And it is believed that he is still supervising the hotel today.
Okay.
So we're going to get into some ghosties here.
Ooh, that's my favorite part.
Seth Bullock, he is the most frequently seen entity. People say they basically see the cowboy hat, the stash, the brows. It matches. It is Seth. Okay.
Stop it. They see the brows.
I don't know if they said the brows because I don't have it in my notes, but I imagine they see the brows. I know they saw the mustache and the hat.
Oh, you can absolutely see these brows and mustache from the afterlife.
Yes, those brows. I don't know how he did it. He should have been putting something to grow them out on there.
It was one of the tonics from the guy's cases downstairs.
That's it. Got it. He was like, give me the fluffiest brows. Guys, I don't know. He might have more thicker hair in his brows than what I have on my head.
Seth Bullock has an average man's mustache over each eye.
And then his mustache is a full head of hair.
Y'all, that is a mustache. Like, this is this is all man right here. He's... Nothing else.
Do you hear that, everyone? All man right there. Amanda's type of man, apparently.
I don't know about that. I'm intimidated. Okay. But I'm also in awe at the same time.
He is pretty awesome. So, like I said, he is the most frequently seen entity. People who have seen Seth state they've never been harmed, but some have been touched, maybe like him passing behind them, not inappropriately, or like him tapping their shoulder, seeing this tall, ghostly figure that seems to match what you would expect to see Seth as. They've heard their name called out. They've heard whistling. He is supposedly lurking in several different rooms on the second or in the second and third floor hallway as well, in Bully's, which is the restaurant, or in Seth's cellar, which is, I believe, the bar, the wedding venue, all of that stuff. Now, most employees state he's just continuing to play host. He's doing his job, dang it.
This he is put, his hotel.
He put his heart and soul into this hotel. He was probably pissed when they reverted it back to a hardware store.
He was like, what are y'all doing? We've done that.
Back to the hotel, guys.
Do you know what? Y'all got to get out of here.
That's probably... Sell it
to somebody who will respect my wishes.
Yeah. So, he mostly just plays host, and he tends to supervise his employees.
Oh, this sounds great.
They have to be hard at work at all times. Seth was known to be a very like hardworking guy. He was known to really, you know, he didn't like in his life his employees not working and would get on him. And in death, that's no different, because employees will often state they feel a presence when they're taking breaks or on their phone or doing something they shouldn't be. Most of the time, they will say they get back to work immediately when they feel his ghostly presence that they believe to be Seth. They also say... Oh, hell no.
No,
I'm on my 15.
You can never escape? Are you shitting me?
Nope. They also, by they I mean employees, also state that the paranormal activity tends to increase when employees are idle or when they whistle or hum.
I can't even whistle?
Nope.
You know what? His eyebrows aren't that great, really.
Okay, but he is just trying to make sure his hotel is operating smoothly. And if you're standing there but supposed to be mopping the shared bathroom and you're texting your bud, he's like, excuse you, I'm not paying you to text.
Okay, but I can sweep and hum at the same time.
Apparently, the humming is not professional.
Neither are those caterpillars on your face, but hey.
Well, so Seth, he's not just a little bit of a grump. You know, he seems a little grumpy, especially with his employers. There is at least one report that Seth's spirit helped a lost child back to their room as well. Does that change your opinion on him again?
No.
Okay.
He feels a little too strict, but also like, okay, that's sweet.
Hey, that he's too strict as an employer, but yes, he is a great host to his hotel guests.
I don't know. Was the kid humming when he got lost?
Probably crying, but he helped him back to his room.
It's probably because he was being so noisy.
But that's still nice. He could have just been like, shoo, shoo, child, let me scare you. Instead, he's like, what room were you in? I don't know if this is the conversation the spirit had with said child, but he made sure the child got back to the room in one piece. And so I feel like he gets credit for that.
Okay, fine.
So anyways, in addition to all these things that I've just listed, people often claim to see apparitions, orbs. They also smell the smell of a cigar smoke, which Seth was known for.
Oh, okay.
Plates and glasses from the restaurant have been seen shaking and some even appearing to be thrown in the restaurant.
Unnecessary.
Yep. Lights or appliances will turn on and off on their own. And when they discuss the appliances, it was large appliances.
So like the oven?
Uh-huh.
No, sir, do you want this place to burn down again?
Well, I don't know. That's just what they're saying. They also mentioned items are often moved around, so like a guest could place, I don't know, they could be unpacking and place a shirt and then all of a sudden, or a shirt on the bed, and turn to grab another shirt, and when they turn back around, the shirt is in the closet. I don't know if that's the case, but idea behind it.
Okay.
Things are getting moved in the room. Showers will randomly turn on. So he's preventing fires by turning on the showers so that they overflow and prevent the fire.
He's wasting water is what he's doing.
I know.
It's really going to cut into your lobster budget and your pheasant budget.
From what I found, it's only when guests are in the room. It's not when, like, or not guests, when someone's like just cleaned the room or a guest is in the room.
So now he's telling me I stink and I need to shower.
Yeah.
Like, you stink. Get off my good linens.
There was one story where like a cleaner, a maid, she went in and she was cleaning and the water turned on and just like sprayed her down.
That's so rude. Was she humming? Is that why?
Probably. Sorry, ma'am. We don't do no humming around here. There are also reports of footsteps in hallways when no one is there. Guests claim to have strange pictures with weird anomalies. Alarm clocks in the rooms go off after not having been set. Oftentimes, they're not even plugged in and going off.
Oh, I would be pissed.
I know, right? TVs will operate when no one's operating them, or at least no one's visible. Oftentimes, again, unplugged. An antique clock chimes, but this clock hasn't been functional in years.
I hate clocks. Clocks are another thing that are just so creepy.
This one's going to probably piss you off. There's at least one report that the employee went in, cleaned the bathroom, put a brand new fresh roll of toilet paper in the bathroom. And when they came back in, the toilet paper had just been unrolled like a cat had played with it.
What was the point of that? Now it's wasted.
I don't know. Someone done did it. It wasn't the employee, and they were adamant that there was no one in the room. No one else could have done it. Like, no one went in, and it was brand new.
You know they got in trouble.
Well, most of the reports are attributed to Seth, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, some have claimed to have seen apparitions of two young girls that are seen in the hallways in certain rooms. And these other entities are often attributed to a time where there was a smallpox outbreak in Deadwood. Reportedly, the basement was used as a sick ward, and a lot of people lost their lives to the illness, including children. However, I had a lot of conflicting dates of when this happened, so I could not historically place this accurately on when this smallpox epidemic happened in Deadwood. So, yes, someone probably got in trouble, but they probably were like, it was the little girl spirits. Dang it.
Either way, like, unnecessary.
Yeah.
What do you even do with it? Now you have to throw it away.
Uh-huh. Look, I'm just telling wasteful. You what happened.
Just wasteful.
Yeah. Now, there are several paranormal investigation teams that have been there and done a full investigation. Yes, this includes Ghost Adventures. No, I did not watch it. Because Cody's been hogging the TV, so I didn't get a chance. But there is one called Black Hills Paranormal. They actually have their evidence posted on their website.
Love it.
And I should say they only included EVPs on their website as evidence. I personally could only hear a couple of items they claim to have heard, but this is probably why I wouldn't make a good paranormal investigator. Because I'd be like, I didn't hear anything. And they're like, you didn't hear that voice? Uh-uh. Heard nothing. What do you mean there's a voice? But I do have a link. Do you want to hear a couple of them?
Yes. Yes, I would love to.
I knew the answer would be yes. I'm going to be honest, I forgot that I put this link in here.
Oh, fun. It's a surprise for everyone.
For our listeners, because this is property of Black Hills Paranormal Investigations, I'll link them. We'll put the link in the description or somewhere where you guys can go in and listen to it. But we're not going to put that in the actual recording. So those are the EVPs they have posted. What do you think of them?
I think they have some good ones. I think they definitely have some good ones. And some of them I was like, yeah.
Some of them were like, that was, what was it, the first one where we're like, I don't hear anything.
You thought it was a door and I thought it was a zipper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they might have like video recording to say no one did a zipper, no doors opened or whatever. Yeah. I don't know that. I'm just telling you from what I'm hearing in here.
Yeah, this is my opinion.
Yeah. Or like the garbled voice. I'm like, doesn't sound like anything to me.
Yeah.
I will post the link for this, guys. I don't know where yet, but it'll be posted somewhere. But I'll get that posted. That it was interesting to listen to. Again, like I said, I would not be a good paranormal investigator. I'd be like, what do you hear? I don't hear that.
They would have to like make noises loud enough for my tinnitus to pick up on it. So I probably wouldn't be very good either.
I wouldn't be good even at visual stuff. I'd be like, it was just dust. And they're like, that is a full-blown apparition. What do you mean?
Look, I couldn't even read the Popeyes menu tonight with my glasses on. So, yeah.
I don't feel bad. I can't do that on a regular day. So, well, today the hotel really leans into the haunted aspect. And they offer guided tours. Only $20 per person on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Tours last about 90 minutes, and they are guided tours. And there's no reservation needed for these tours. So you can just show up.
What are we waiting for? It's Friday night. Let's go.
Hey, Dad, let's go. He just looks.
Are you kidding me?
Dad, this ghost just wants us to get to work.
That's it.
Yeah. So I don't see any harm. Not in this one. It's not
he sounds like a pretty...
Dad, just, when you get a chance, go look at his bushy eyebrows and his moustache, which you're going to be jealous of.
We you know have what? To meet this man. Whoa, excuse me. We have to meet this man.
Yeah. See, he was a sheriff. You, Dad, you guys have something in common to some extent. You were both law people.
You hate fun.
Exactly.
You're both old.
I didn't say it this time. Oh my god, that reminds me. I got Cody in trouble the other day.
Oh, why?
Cody was driving home from work, and one of the signs on the freeway said something about silver emergency or something. Silver alert. And it was just me and Cody on the phone, and he goes, is your dad missing? I was like, are you calling my dad old? Yeah. He's like, don't call your dad.
You titled.
I called my dad. I was like, dad. So Cody's on his shit list. Though I will say Cody probably is saying that because lately I've been doing a lot of old man jokes to my dad. So it's probably my fault. But either way, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He said it. Of his own volition.
Oh, no.
Oh, poor God.
I was going to... Yeah, poor Cody.
You want to know what's even better is my dad probably forgot about that. Now we're going to remind him.
Now he's, So. Is Cody ever not on his shit list?
I said that too, and my dad said, no, he's not always on my shit list. Well, he is now.
Oh, okay. And now he is again.
You want to know who's always on his shit list?
You?
That'd be me. That'd be me.
Oh, that's because he listens weekly.
Yeah. Yeah. So now it's a me problem. But anyways, that's all I've got on the Bullock Hotel. I do think we need to go. Just for fun.
Yes. I'm down for that.
Okay.
South Dakota? I can do that.
Yeah, this one's relatively safe when it comes to paranormal. Like, we're just going to go see some employees get yelled at by a ghost. Do you think our tour guide? Well, do you think our tour guide would whistle?
Could we request one that does? Could we just go in and be like, hey, who here whistles?
Or we could even just say, can you just stand idle on your phone for like 2 minutes?
Hey, yes. Be like, hey, what's your Instagram?
Yeah, I can't find it. I can't find it. You know?
Yeah. That's got to get something.
It's, you know what? It gets more paranormally when they're idle, so... Maybe they just like, come on into this room. I'm going to take a nap. Spend 10 minutes.
We have to ask him, how does the shower work? What do you press again?
Right. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to Hell on Heels Podcast. To see pictures from this episode, you can follow us on Instagram, Hell on Heels Podcast, Facebook, Hell on Heels Podcast, or X, Hell on Heels Pod. You can find us on Linktree by typing in Hell on Heels Podcast Linktree. If you want to support us, please like, review, rate, share, and subscribe on your preferred listening platforms. If you want to take your support one step further so we can create additional content for you, you can donate through Patreon. We're working to release specials for our patrons. If you have your own true crime or paranormal story suggestions, words of encouragement, please email us at hellonheelspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to tell your friends to listen with you as well. Bye.
Bye.